From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska. This is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. It is September 25th, 2011, and we are up here at Dog Works Radio Studios in Alaska with my co-host, Michelle. How are you?
I'm doing great.
What is going on at Alaska and Denver Dog Works?
Well, you know, I just want to backtrack and remind everybody that it is Sunday and Forto's Fantasy Football is in all action. I don't know where I'm placed, but I'm having a good time watching my Giants beat the Eagles over my shoulder here in the radio station. And I'm just looking forward to keeping you from getting that four-peat.
You know, what I always find interesting, and I've talked about this before, is having these football games up there in Alaska. They start at 9 a.m., and they're well over by dinner time, which is very nice. We don't have to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning to find out what the scores are.
You know, but chicken wings taste kind of funky for breakfast.
They do. And, you know, that's a funny that you say that, is a lot of the restaurants around here, they serve breakfast brunches for Sunday football instead of the hamburgers and pizza fare.
You know, the bars are open, too.
That's exactly right. So, you know, we are huge football fans, and we're not just dog fans on Dog Works Radio. We have a special guest today calling in from California. He is called The Horse's Friend. His name is Stan Crummel, and his website is thehorsesfriend.net. He has an amazing video on there. You guys have to check it out. We're going to bring him up in just a second. But before we do, I want to ask Michelle, what is going on with our two dogs that we have in training up here, DJ for service work, as well as Nico for executive protection?
Well, let's start with DJ, because DJ had quite the week. We have been working with DJ, getting him prepared for his Canine Good Citizen test, as well as training him for his public access training and learning his specific service commands. Teaching him his specific service commands has been a breeze. CGC, on the other hand, has been a little bit difficult. CGC is the Canine Good Citizen put on by the American Kennel Club, and it is one of the first stepping stones that we utilize for getting a dog prepared for higher levels of training. That being said, he just has a difficulty with being out of my sight. He likes to know where I'm at all times, and that's why he is a service dog. We did take him to the Diamond Mall down in Anchorage this week, where he did extraordinarily well. I was highly impressed with his behavior and his ability to help me go up and down the stairs, how he greeted young children, stayed where he was supposed to in public and let me go out of his sight, and then came to me about 25 feet away, which was very good for him. He did meet a moose behind glass windows, And because he did so well, he earned an Aunt Annie's pretzel that he enjoyed quite well in the car. So we're proud of where DJ's at. He goes home in about 4 weeks. Nico is just 13 weeks old. He's gone through a little bit of health problems with some kennel cough and some warming issues, but he's bounced back after just 3 days of medication, and he's doing quite well. He will follow us wherever we are on our property and barks appropriately at stranger danger for his age. I mean, he is curious. He will go check it out. He doesn't just bark because the other dogs are barking. So he's doing pretty good as well.
You know, yesterday was a fascinating day up here in Willow, Alaska. You know, Willow is the mushing capital of the world, and the Willow Community Center is the official start of the Iditarod. And yesterday we had the Canine Athlete Symposium. Tell us a little bit about that. There were some great people there, weren't there?
There were. And, you know, for Willow being so small, and we're really far away from Anchorage, according to everyone in Anchorage, it's really not that far of a drive, though. It's only about an hour and 20 minutes. I was really surprised that the same people were here last year. that we saw, and I was hoping that we would have a bigger turnout. So I'm thinking that maybe next year Mushy Huskies might kick off at the Willow Mushers Association Symposium, which would be rather cool because we can interview some people right here on our sister show about mushing and kick off the whole Mushy Huskies season that way. But, you know, there were quite a few interesting people. Dee Dee Genro, who has ran in 29 consecutive Iditarods, was not only our neighbor, but she was, you know, at the symposium, had a lot of educating comments to offer to people. She's actually very fabulous to listen to. She offers everything she knows to people without a question. You know, and then we have some of the house favorites. Dallas Stevie, who won the Yukon Quest last year, also is a neighbor of ours now. He was here. Egil Ellis was here. He's a big-time sprint musher. And Rainey Smith, as well as Martin Boozer, and the winner of the Iditarod last year, Mr. John Baker, who is quite the storyteller. I enjoyed his storytelling quite a lot. He claims that he is one of the most boring people you'll ever meet in the world. I disagree. I think he's very intriguing.
You know, he has no qualms about saying he is the most lazy musher in the world.
I don't know. I think you've got him. You're a close second.
But, you know, it just goes to show you. And one of the things that that John Baker really hit home is when you're running the Iditarod, you're running your own race. You don't need to worry about the competition. That will take care of itself. But when you're out there on the trail, you truly are running your own race.
Absolutely. And you know what impressed me the most is every one of them wasn't encouraging you to get out there behind the sled any more than they were discouraging you to get out there behind the sled. It was very much, you know what, if this is something you want to do, then get out there and do it. But realize that it has nothing to do with who your sponsors are, what type of equipment you're running with, or even what kind of dogs you're running. It all comes down to how you train. And that was this year's big consensus among all the mushers, no matter where they're coming from, where they've been, how many sponsors they've had, or how many dilemmas they've had to deal with. It was train your dog.
And you know, the evening ended in something that I was so looking forward to since they announced it earlier this year. It was an Inuit band, Bomyoya, I believe is how you pronounce it.
Pamya.
Tell us a little bit about that. That they call themselves Native Fusion. I have never heard anything like that before, and those guys rock the house.
You know, they were quite entertaining. It wasn't just Native drum music and the singing that traditional way that you think of it. They brought some comedy to the stage, and that's what made it quite enjoyable, and it was family-friendly. You know, there were children in the house as young as infants. There was a group of, I think, 4 to 7-year-olds sitting very close to us that were just having a blast, giggling and laughing and had kicked their shoes off and were very comfortable in the situation. And it was a 3-hour concert, and that was phenomenal in itself because I don't think and we've been to quite a few Native American events where they've had concerts and drummers and things like that, and they've never gone for 3 hours, and that was really cool. It made it truly a fun event, and it was intimate, and that's what made it fun as well.
And I've said this over and over again, this is why we moved here. We moved here to be part of this mushing scene, to be part of a smaller community, and to chase our dreams, on whether it's the Iditarod Trail or the Serum Run or just some trail running behind our houses. This is why we moved here up to Alaska. This is something you would not see down in the States, huh?
No, I'm sitting here in my sweatpants with no makeup on, which I typically never wear makeup anyways, but I'm quite dirty today because before we got to start the radio show, we stacked some firewood. Last week we were in our pajamas, this week we're in our get dirty gear. And you know, that's just what it's about. I think that more of America needs to go back to their roots and not be afraid to get their hands dirty.
You know, getting your hands dirty is what we're going to talk about here in our next segment. This guy here, he has an amazing story to tell, and I am so anxious to get involved with Mr. Stan Crummel. His website is thehorsesfriend.net. And like I said, guys, you need to check out this video. If you are a child of the 70s or 80s, I'm sure you have seen the show That's Incredible. I used to watch it every Sunday night with my mom and brother, and that's something we always look forward to, and I'm so itching to hear the story from Stan right after we get started here. Go ahead and introduce your guest, Michelle. I know you've talked to Stan over the last couple of weeks. Go ahead.
Stan, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Robert. Michelle, I certainly am.
Well, welcome to DogWorks Radio, and we're happy to have you on as a guest today. Why don't you let us know who exactly is the horse's friend?
Okay, well, thank you both very, very much for this opportunity. The horse's friend basically is a friend to all horses that have problems. I specialize, unlike a lot of people that just help other people with horses, I specialize in horses that really have a serious problem. In fact, that video was made around the gray horse that you see in that video. This horse had injured several people very seriously and was going to be put down for it. And a partner of mine happened to come across this horse, heard about it, went and looked at it, and finally talked the owners out of having it put down. And on that video, you see a sequence where I'm working with that horse in the beginning, and then at the very end, you see that horse 19 weeks later following me calmly across the pasture, completely saddled, and I'm just walking in front of it, and the horse is following me. And so that's what I have done primarily for the last 30 years. I've cowboyed all over the West. My grandfather came here from Czechoslovakia in 1860 and settled our home ranch in Nebraska, which was roughly 100 square miles. And so I've cowboyed all over the West in most Western states, and I've even gone back to the East Coast where there was some pretty good-sized horse and cattle outfits, worked back there, and then eventually got myself an invitation to come to Hollywood, and I was working in Hollywood for about a year, and Alan Landsberg asked me to help him start up the TV show That's Incredible, and fortunately or unfortunately, I consider my hands a blessing. I was asked through several different stunt guys, come up with something that will be something nobody has ever seen anybody do before. And I came up with the Tunnel of Fire, and unfortunately there was a mistake made. The gloves that were to work with my fire suit failed, and I ended up being burned for about a minute at 2,000 degrees without any gloves on. And I spent the next 2 years spending $5.9 million to get my hands back to the point of where they are today. And as you see in the video, I'm still working with horses. And I have just considered my hands an asset because they actually make me gentler with horses. And so over that period of time in the hospital, I religiously studied day after day equine psychology, and then through that I came up with the horse's friend.
So Stan, this is Robert again. Thank you so much for joining us today on DogWorks Radio. And you know, as we mentioned, this is a dog training show, but we always have different and unique guests on, so I do want to thank you for taking your time out on a Sunday afternoon or morning in your case. You're calling in from California. You know, you're a guy kind of after, I'm kind of molded a little bit after you. I'm a pretty avid skydiver. I've taken a risk or two in my life, and you know, I am just amazed at some of the things that people get themselves into. And when I saw that video on your website of the old show, That's Incredible, that just brought back some memories of what people do to get themselves into trouble. You know, what makes you tick, Stan? I know you're a very gentle soul now with the horses, and you know, you kind of you know, do your thing with those guys. But how in the world did you go from skydiving and firewalking to horse training? What makes a guy tick that way?
Well, you know, when you grow up in a ranch atmosphere, One of the things that was adhered to on our ranch is you were never, ever rough with a horse. In fact, when we started our colts, and unlike, obviously I'm not from California, you see and hear a lot of people starting colts at 2 years old. Well, we never got on our colts until they were 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, and you could never be rough with them. We worked with them in a round pen, and my uncle used to take one of the reins when you first started riding, and he would take what's called butcher string. And butcher string is just soft cotton string, and he would double loop it into your head stall, and that's what one of the reins was held onto the horse with. So if you got rough with that horse, if that horse got a little scared and you got in a hurry instead of taking it slow, well, you ended up with one rein because that string would break. So it taught us from the very, very beginning to take our time and be slow and learn how this horse thinks. So I grew up in that kind of an atmosphere. Unfortunately, I had a bit of a wild streak in me. And when I finally decided to get involved with the military, which was just as Vietnam was getting started, I enlisted, and for whatever reason, I seemed to kind of draw a little bit of attention, and I think a lot of my abilities to survive, a lot of my abilities to take care of myself, and maybe a little bit of leadership there, I'm not sure. Anyway, I was pursued by the military to go a little bit farther, then a little bit farther, a little bit farther, until I actually disappeared, and for a few years, nobody knew where I was or who I was or what I was doing, and unfortunately, most of my team people are no longer with us. Some of them were never recovered. But I was exposed to a lot of ways to hurt people, and unfortunately became extremely good at it. In some respects, take advantage of my training today because I do take jobs as bodyguards and things like that, but and have in the past and recently just finished one. But when I was burned, I had to take a serious look at my life, and I decided that there was going to be a huge change in my life. In the beginning, they were going to amputate my hands, and I told them, I said, you just do your job, and God and I will do the rest. Well, fortunately, my hands were able to be reconstructed over a two-year period of time, and as I mentioned earlier, they spent just about $6 million getting me back to where I was today, and I had an intent to go back to being who and what I was. But after the 2 years, I realized I was never going to be who I was. I was never going to be able to be that person because I had gone through a change, and very, very gradually, I started to see that I needed to be more gentle than rough. And as I said, I thought about that 2 years, thinking about what I was going to do, and I came up with the idea of the equine animal that had been so special to me throughout my life. I had to think about what I was going to do with my life to enjoy my life in this position or situation I was with my hands. And so I started studying equine psychology. In fact, you'll notice there on either the horsesfriend.com or the horsesfriend.net, you'll see education is the answer. So I started pursuing an education in equine psychology. Well, I spent 2 years in the hospital and then 2 years learning to use my hands again. It gave me 4 years to start and to base my thinking on to create the business called The Horse's Friend that I operate today. And in that time, I realized that pain wasn't the answer. I had endured so much pain that I didn't ever want to inflict any pain on the animal that I love so much, the horse. Therefore, I decided that I would come up with a way that I could work with a horse without ever creating any pain. In fact, all my literature on it, underneath education, the education is the answer, it clearly states no pain. I would much rather work with a 1,000-pound horse and work with a 4.5-pound brain than I would fight that 1,000-pound body. So through the use of equine psychology and understanding that this is a fear-in-flight animal, I took advantage of the psychology. And today, people are just amazed when they have a horse that apparently, for whatever reason, has become very, very aggressive and hurt people. And they watch me work with this horse over a couple hours. In a couple of hours, I'm able to send that horse out 30 or 40 feet from me, and then I can just simply, with my body language and a sound, ask that horse to turn around and come back and stand calmly next to me. So I have found that just being gentle and education truly is the answer. That's what's basically formed me as the horse's friend I am today.
So, Stan, according to the video, your accident was in 1979, right?
1980. The 79 thing, I performed the world record. I set 5 world records in the Houston Astrodome jumping over cars. And I owned part of a four-wheel drive business in Dallas. And I was racing periodically, and I came up with an idea of jumping the finish line rather than breaking the finish line. And consequently, some people started coming to me and say, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? The Alan Altman, board of directors for the Houston Astrodome, wanted to come up with an idea to draw the public into the Astrodome to use it for something more than sports. So we sat down, and I came up with a jump over 20 cars. And nobody had done anything like that in the Houston Astrodome, and that was the very first Houston Astrodome thrill show.
Hmm. And now today we have truck pulls and everything in the stadium.
Right. Yeah.
So this was the early 80s when you got involved with the horse training.
Right.
So was this before or after the famous now Robert Redford movie about the horse whisperer? Was that before or after?
Okay. I knew that was going to come up. Yeah, I refused to work on that movie. Bob talked to me, at least it was supposed to be Bob. They hounded me, and I told Robert Redford, I said, if you come up to the ranch, I've got 21 head of horses, and what I will do is I will show you and teach you how to handle a horse that really has some severe problems, which we all know that horse had been hit by a truck, and I will have to say that that movie misled the public. In fact, two good friends of mine that are now gone, Tom Doritz and Ray Hunt, both were affiliated with that movie and wrote letters of apologies in Western Horsemen because that movie did mislead the public. Because as I tell people, the reason why I wouldn't do that movie is the last thing I would do is tie a horse up, throw it on the ground, and tell a one-legged girl, get on, try your luck. I just wouldn't do it. So that movie there basically misled the public in respect to how you handle a horse. And several things happened on the set that I was told by people that were there that I had told them not to do. But unfortunately, Hollywood is in a romance mode. They're not in a reality mode. And unfortunately, the media, I refuse probably 2 or 3 movies a year because they won't tell the truth about a horse. A horse does not have any emotions. He's a fear-in-flight animal. His whole deal is if anything goes wrong, he leaves. But the problem is the first thing we try to do is stop him from leaving, and there's a conflict.
Well, you know, Stan, we're talking to Stan Krubble, thehorsesfriend.com and thehorsesfriend.net. The reason I bring that up, Stan, is you often hear of horse whispering and dog, and of course now we have the Dog Whisperer on TV, a very popular show on TV.
Oh, yeah.
So my question to you is, Stan, what is this whispering stuff? Nobody really knows. Why do they call it that?
Okay, great. Golly, I'll tell you, you must be reading my mind, Bob. Okay, let me tell you where the horse whisperer thing came from. And then, of course, if you look at the sequence of this, the dog whisperer thing came afterwards. Now, the dog whisperer thing is a great thing. Because you can whisper to a dog, and the dog will, as you notice from being around your dogs, sometimes you'll say or do something in a whisper, and they respond so quick, it even kind of surprises you. Now, let me tell you where the horse whisperer came from. In England, in the late 1700s, all of the difference, what we call counties, they have them, and they're called districts or something. I can't think of the British name for it. But anyway, any of these township areas, they would have one man that would handle any of the horses. And you got to remember that during the 1700s, these horses were the only mode of transportation, the only mode of work. Everything was done with horses, and primarily draft horses. Well, what the people would do if they had a really unruly horse, they would take this horse to this man. This man had a barn, and the barn was all boarded up except one way in and one way out. And they would bring the horse to the man. The man would take the horse in there, and the people were not allowed to go into the barn. The only thing they could do was wait outside, and all they could hear from everything that was going on inside that barn was a whisper. Now,
and that's where they came up with
the name. That's where the whisper thing came from. Now, if you read any books that were written in English or in England about horse behavior and correcting things, they're very, very brutal, very harsh. Even today, they're written, and boy, they say, you tie this horse up, you hit this horse, you do this, you do that. They're very, very harsh. Now, let's go to the American side where the whisper started. As we know, the Spanish brought a lot of horses to this country in the beginning. And as history changes and certain times changes, a lot of these horses got loose, were released, and started going on their own. Well, the Indians wanted to ride as they saw the Spanish riding. So what would happen is because they didn't have horses and they didn't know that much about them, they knew they could be ridden, but they didn't know anything about them. So the only way they could catch a horse is 7 or 8 braves would do a relay. They would find 4 or 5 horses together, and those 8 braves, or 5 or 7, whatever it was, they would chase one particular horse. What most people don't know is a horse can't run very far. He can trot 100 miles as an adult horse, can trot physically 100 miles, but running, they burn too many calories too fast. That's why horse races are only just a couple of miles at the very most at any given time. So anyway, these Indians would run the horse down. When one Indian would get tired, another one would be waiting in the area, and he'd take off and chase that horse. Before these Indians were out of breath themselves, they had run this horse to a standstill. At that time, they would literally tie this horse up because he was so exhausted that he couldn't fight at all. They would tie him to a rock, to a tree, to a big anything that they could keep him from getting away from. And then that horse would stay right there without any food or water. Now, there was one Indian in every tribe that could do this. His job was to gentle these horses. The other Indians were made to stay away. They couldn't get within 100 yards of him. All they could hear as he worked with these horses is a whisper of the chants that he would say. He would sit by that horse. This horse got no water, no food, until this Indian could do anything he wanted with and to this horse, and the horse would not resist it. At the time this horse started to get gentle, then he very, very slowly would give the horse water and food. A great many of these horses died because they would sometimes starve to death before they'd give in. But this man, that was his job, and nobody came close. All they could hear was a whisper of his chants. And so that's the story behind the horse whisper that came from England and then that was originated here by the Indians here in the United States.
So we're talking to Stan Crummell. He is thehorsesfriend.com and thehorsesfriend.net. It's a pleasure to have him on Dogworks Radio today. And my next part of this show, Stan, is a lot of dog owners, especially people that live with property, of course, also have horses. So there's a big influx of the two different training styles when you're dealing with dogs and horses.
Right.
My next set of questions, Stan, is can you tell us some common misconceptions about training horses? You know, I hear a lot from my clients that they say, you know, I've tried this and that with my horse and it just doesn't work. Give us some training tips, I guess.
Okay. Well, first of all, what I tell people is a horse learns, so we're teachers, not trainers. A horse is a very, very gentle animal by nature. And so I tell people with our knowledge, we can learn how the horse reacts, because a horse doesn't think like we do. The horse does not have any emotions. And I'll tell you a funny little story, but if you think about it, we get on this horse and we kick him and hit him and jerk on his mouth and everything. If this guy could think, he'd say, one time's enough. You're never going to get on me. You do that with a dog all the time, he'll end up biting you. But the horse endures because he doesn't have any emotions. He doesn't have any forethought. Now, he'll learn things, but he does not have emotions. And I'll just relate this little story that I give at the seminars. I have people tell me that their horse loves them. And I say, no, your horse doesn't love you. And they say, oh, yes, because when I come up to feed him, he nickers to me and everything. I said, he's just telling you, hurry up and feed me, stupid, is what he's doing. But basically, what people don't understand is this is a fear and flight animal. For thousands of years, everything that's gone wrong in their life, they run away from it. So what I tell people, okay, you have a horse, you've owned this horse for 10 years, and you two can, Michelle and Robert, you can relate to this. You've owned horses for a long period of time, and these horses do appear like they have some kind of connection with you in respect to the way they feel. But they don't have feelings. They have a survival instinct. And when they're around you, what they learn is you're not going to hurt them. Now, we'll get back to my story. I tell people with a horse that they just know loves them. I said, okay, if your horse loves you, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take this rope, and I'm going to tie it around your horse's neck. And then I'm going to take this rope, and I'm going to tie it around your neck. And then I'm going to take this whip, and I'm going to strike your horse on the rump. If your horse loves you, he won't drag you down the road. And all of a sudden, reality hits. Now, I'll guarantee you, if you took the rope and put it around one human's neck, and then your loved one's neck, and then one of the two of you got struck, you would not drag that other person by the neck because you care about them. But that horse is a survivor. You hit that horse on the rump with that whip, that horse is going to run off, and that horse is going to drag you by the neck. So I want people to investigate equine psychology and realize that horses are strictly a survivor, and they will do whatever they can to stay alive. And what brings makes a big difference between a dog and a horse is you can take a dog and work with a dog and use food rewards or any time a little treats and things like that. But see, with a horse, what can you do with a horse? If a horse is working with you and he doesn't want to work with you, and you try to give him some grass for doing something good, and he runs off, he can run 50 feet from you and find grass without doing anything. So you can't use that kind of mental stimuli to create anything in a horse, because the horse actually would be better off without you. In fact, every day, if we weren't involved in a horse's life, the only thing this horse would be doing is eating, sleeping, drinking, and running away when things are wrong. The rest of the time, he's just standing around.
Right, right. And those are all great points there, Stan. Again, Stan Crummell, thehorsesfriend.net. You guys have to check out his video. I tell you what, it's very enlightening for sure. Stan, my next question is, what is probably the biggest problem that people face with their horses, whether it's a training problem or a health problem or whatever? What are people having the most struggles with?
I would say right now, because of our economy, people, I'm hearing about it, I get calls all over the country, can you find a home for my horse? Here in this particular area that I'm at, I'm in the Fallbrook area, which is just south of Murrieta, Temecula, California, just north of San Diego, California, about 50 miles. A bale of hay is going to run you $20, $25. And that bale of hay is going to feed one horse for 3 days. And so the public is really being pressed. In fact, on the highway, Highway 10, I believe it is, out toward Las Vegas, they're finding horses turned loose along the road all the time. And we're finding all kinds of, we're seeing all kinds of rescue organizations popping up everywhere. And they all want donations from this organization or that organization. And that, unfortunately, when the economy throughout our country was good, hay was $7 a bale, $6 a bale, and you were able to keep three or four horses. But now, unfortunately, that's really become a problem because buying hay for four horses, you've got, you're getting close to $100 a day to feed your horses.
Yeah, I know that feeling. With 50 sled dogs, it costs us about $2,000 a month just in food, so I can understand that for sure.
All right.
My next question, Stan, we have about 6 minutes left here on DogWorks Radio, is I want to find out what your opinion is with these organizations that capture the wild horses, the Mustangs, and then train them up and then, place them with people. I know in Colorado they have a very popular program in the prison system where the guys train up the horses and then place them. Tell us a little bit about that and your opinion.
Well, I have I've spoke out against that for years. The prison system came to me, asked if I would set up a program, and I did. some of these programs, you can, if you do investigate them, you'll see several things that I teach people to do with horses. Unfortunately, they don't follow through with all of it. But this is a very, very unfortunate program because have any of us seen our government take over a business and be successful with it? There's a famous house of ill repute called something, I can't remember, in Las Vegas or in Nevada, and the government took it over for taxes, and they still couldn't make any money with that. So our government is the wrong organization to be doing anything with these horses. What they do is they mislead the public. First of all, there's no such thing as a Mustang. And I am sure going to get a whole bunch of flack on that one. But ladies and gentlemen, in our listening audience, in the 1860s, when my dad settled, there were wild horses. The original cowboys were just little bitty guys. They were kids, 13, 14 years old, and they could ride a Mustang. And I won't go into a lot of detail, but they were fine for a 13, 14, 15-year-old boy. But when men started becoming cowboys after they recovered from the Civil War, what happened is they needed horses that were bigger. So the American Mustang, which was certainly a tough little horse, but they had to breed a bigger horse into it. So 100, 150 years ago, 200 years ago, they started building these horses so they could take care of a job of being saddled and carrying a 150, 200-pound man all day long. And so, first of all, there's no such thing as a Mustang. The other thing in respect to what the government has done, the government has taken, and these horses are wild horses. I have, on two occasions, taken the time and spent 2 years working with each horse to get the horse where it was manageable and consistent so an individual could ride it. But these are wild animals that are called horses. They're not just a wild horse. These are wild animals that are called horses. Well, what happens, the government comes in there, they gather up a whole bunch of them, and then they tell the public, here, adopt one of these horses. You can't imagine how many calls I've got from people said, we bought one of those horses. We got home yesterday. The horse is gone. We let him out of the truck, threw out of the trailer, and this horse is gone. This program misleads the people. It takes a long time. This is an animal that's run loose for anywhere from 2 to 6 or 7 years before he's brought in, and this horse is not a horse. He's a wild animal. So when you take on the responsibility of one of these wild horses, you're going to take a year to 3 years to get this horse so he becomes a dependable horse that won't hurt somebody.
Well, that's from the quote-unquote horse's mouth there. We're talking to Stan Crummel, thehorsesfriend.com and thehorsesfriend.net. Stan, we have about a minute and a half left.
Okay.
What do you want to end with here?
Well, I just want to thank you all very much for having me on the show and putting up with my palaver. And I just want to wish everybody out there a very, very blessed day. And if they ever figure that they've got a situation where they need an old dumb cowboy like me, just get on the internet and just punch in the horse's friend, and I'll do whatever I can to help.
Thank you very much. Michelle, do you have anything else to add for Stan?
No, Stan, I just want to wish you all the best. Stay healthy out there. So anytime you want to promote anything, give us a call, send me an email. We're more than happy to get you back on the show. You were truly tremendous to listen to and guide, and I think that your advice to people is top-notch. I mean, my dad, you know, raised me the same way. He said there is no such thing as a Mustang. I know you cannot have a wild horse. So, you know, I appreciate your words and your wisdom, and I wish you a great day.
Well, thank you. God bless the both of you.
Thank you very much. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. And this is Robert Forto on behalf of our guest today, Stan Krummel. Again, thehorsesfriend.net. You have to check out that video. And our co-host here in Alaska now, Michelle Forto. We will see you guys next week. Never forget your dreams. Goodbye.